This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Last Thursday, a panel of Texas lawmakers convened a hearing on the state of the Texas Women's Health Program and to discuss how to build on the state's, quote, previous legislative achievements in women's health care. State Senator Jane Nelson, a Republican who chairs the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, said the hearing was intended to discuss the progress in running the new Texas Women's Health Program.
I think we can all agree that women's health should be a top priority for this state and for the legislature, and that's why I asked for our committee to be assigned a charge on this issue. Texas women should have access to family planning, to wellness exams, to cancer screenings, and other important services. It keeps our families healthy and strong, it keeps our health care costs under control, and it's the right thing to do. I realize that 2011 was a difficult budget year and that reductions made to family planning had an impact on access to services. But we also made significant investments and significant progress since then. But I still see so much misleading data being circulated to Texas women, and one of the things I want to do today is just set the record straight. I want to get honest numbers out there. I want to find out where we have gaps, where we need to devote our attention, our resources, and so let me just bear with me while I state some facts. And Commissioner, I'm going to ask you in a minute whether these facts that I'm saying are accurate. Last session, the legislature prioritized women's health and provided $240 million to reach an additional 170,000 women. As a result, and these are the two things that, Commissioner, I'm going to ask you to verify. One, women's health in Texas is now funded at record levels. Two, we have the capacity to serve more women in Texas than ever before.
That was State Senator Jane Nelson, a Republican. She chairs the Senate Health and Human Services Committee in Austin, talking. This was on Thursday at a panel hearing on the state of women's health program. And she wanted to set the record straight, but reproductive right advocates said the hearing did not address critical topics like abortion access in Texas, and they're not satisfied with the new Texas Women's Health Program. That's what we're talking about this half hour. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. And joining us to talk about this, we're joined by Carolyn Jones. She is a contributing writer to the Texas Observer, and her latest article posted online at the texasobserver.org website is Texas's New Abortion Law is Driving Women to Extremes. Also, we're joined by Amanda Stevenson. She is a graduate student researcher assessing the impact of Texas reproductive health legislation for the Texas Policy Evaluation at UT Austin. So, Amanda, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, great. Welcome to The Source. And so we have Senator Nelson talking about the great achievements of the funding of the Texas Women's Health Program. She wants to set the record straight, saying there's misinformation out there in the public, not getting out to taxpayers about how great things are going. What are you seeing with the Texas policy evaluation, how the policy is coming into being?
Well, our project has done a census of all of the family planning providers who were state-funded before the cuts, and we've gone and spoken with the executive directors of those organizations and interviewed them about how their organizations have fared after the cuts that were instituted during the 2011 legislative session. And we have found that 76 family planning clinics have closed since the cuts, which is a substantial portion of the clinics in our state, and that the majority of the damage was to family planning clinics that are dedicated providers of family planning. And these are the clinics that are the best at providing really high-quality family planning care. So that's been a large part of what we've found And we've also been following the efforts that Jane Nelson was part of in the subsequent legislative session last summer, in the spring and the summer. And we've been following the implementation of the expanded primary health care program, which is what Jane Nelson was focused on in the meeting last Thursday. As we've followed that, we have been speaking with providers who have told us that the money, if they were able to get it, was a relatively well-administered program. However, the program does not require that providers provide the full range of contraceptive methods. In particular, it doesn't require that they provide more effective methods of contraception that are very popular with women and very effective for reducing unintended pregnancy. So we're very happy that there is more funding going forward because of the expanded primary health care program, but we have concerns about that program's capacity to really serve women. And then there's a whole separate set of processes that are underway due to the affiliate ban that was instituted that ended the women's health program and excluded Planned Parenthood from the Texas Women's Health Program, which replaced it. And so we're also following how women are impacted by that process. So there are fewer women being served. We know that. We know that HHSC has done a lot of really hard work to recruit providers to replace the capacity that Planned Parenthood was providing. They had previously provided 40% of the care under the Women's Health Program. So there's been a lot of change, and what we've seen is mostly that it's been hard for women to access care.
Okay. All right. There's a lot of ground to cover here. So you say that 76 family planning clinics closed. When you say family planning clinics, is that an abortion facility or is it more than that?
No. None of these clinics provided abortions. They were all family planning clinics only. In Texas, no state money has ever been allowed to go to clinics that provide abortions.
So this is a place that a woman could go to have be examined and also have be given like a birth control?
Yes, exactly.
And they're gone?
These are closed clinics, yes.
Okay, and you talk about there's this expanded money that provided, but it was going to facilities that I've seen some reporting saying that these were places where some of them were like religiously affiliated of centers, family planning centers that didn't tell women about some of their options. Is that what we're talking about?
No. So EPHC, the expanded primary health care program. As far as I'm aware, there's no – I think you may be referring to crisis pregnancy centers.
I don't
think the EPHC is going to crisis pregnancy centers. We haven't seen any evidence of that.
Okay.
Amanda,
I got to take a quick break, okay? We've got a lot of ground to cover, not a lot of time to do it. I appreciate you working with me on this. We're talking about the Texas Women's Healthcare System, the program, and how is it moving forward. We're going to get to Carolyn Jones in just a second and her fantastic reporting in the Texas Observer. We want to hear your phone calls. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the state of the Texas Women's Health Program. On Thursday, the Texas Senate held a hearing in Austin about that, and we're following up. We invite you to call in. The number is 614-8980. We just heard from Amanda Stevenson about the closing of 76 family planning clinics across the state of Texas. If this has impacted you, we'd love to hear your story, or if you've got a take on where Texas is going with the Texas Women's Health Program. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. And the conversation always continues on the website, on our show page at tpr.org. Let's bring in Carolyn Jones. She's a contributing writer to the Texas Observer. She's got a new article on their website now called Texas New Abortion Law is Driving Women to Extremes. Carolyn, welcome to The Source.
Hi, David. Thank you for having me.
So you tell a story, very gripping story, and this was when we were talking about this 20-week ban and Wendy Davis was doing her filibuster up in Austin. This was talked about like this was the nightmare scenario, and this is you found that person, and they tell their story, a real person caught in the nightmare of the 20-week ban. Can you kind of give us a real quick summary of what that was?
Yes, that's right. This is a woman named Sarah Gula. That's not her real name. She asked us to anonymize her. She's a she lives in suburban Houston. She's a mom of two kids. And she found out that she was pregnant last September, and she and her husband were delighted to be having a third child. When they went for their routine 20-week ultrasound scan just a few days before Christmas, however, they learned that the fetus had a severe abnormality. And the doctor said to her, the fetus probably wouldn't survive the pregnancy, but if it did, it would probably suffer seizures and die within a few days. But
they said that the abnormality was not compatible with life.
That's right. He described it as incompatible with life. And he said if by some miracle it did survive the pregnancy, it wouldn't survive much longer after that. So a terrible outcome, shocking diagnosis for Sarah and her husband. They asked the doctor whether they could induce the pregnancy early at one of the specialist hospitals in Houston. And the doctor said to her, sorry, we can't help you here. There's a ban on abortions that starts at 20 weeks. You have to go somewhere else to access the abortion. You've only got 7 days. And he gave her a list of all of the abortion clinics in Texas and sent her on her way. And in the car on the way home, Sarah was desperately phoning each of these abortion clinics to try and make an appointment. She had a number of problems. The first was that the list was out of date, so it didn't reflect the fact that abortions past 20 weeks of pregnancy were now illegal. So she discovered
She finds out she has no options in Texas. That's what she's made aware of. And so she ends up having to go to Little Rock, Arkansas, at their only abortion clinic in Arkansas, and get treated there.
That's right. That was able to provide her an abortion at 20.
And in order to make that trip, she has to hawk her wedding ring.
Her wedding ring. She and her husband were on Medicaid. They didn't have any cash easily available. They had to fix up their car for the 10-hour drive. They had to stay there for 2 days and pay for accommodation and gas. The procedure was $3,500. The clinic gave them a massive discount. But nonetheless, they just didn't have the cash to pay.
And when they were at the clinic, they had to run the gauntlet of the people who were anti-abortion.
That's right.
Very traumatic.
The protesters swarmed them as they entered the clinic.
So, but the thing is about your story, I mean, I recommend it to anybody who's interested in this topic. It's very well written and it tells a gripping story. But how the way the law was written and the way the law is implemented, that it's not syncing up. And so she actually had more options available to her had the law been more closely followed in the state. So what happened there?
That's right. We all talk about a 20-week abortion ban. It's actually 22 weeks of pregnancy. So she, in fact, had two more weeks to make her decision. Secondly, there is an exception for severe fetal anomalies like the one that her fetus had, but none of her health provider didn't know that. And this is because when the law went into effect in October, the state health department did not issue any guidance to any health providers or to any of the abortion clinics. And they were required to read the statute itself if they wanted to understand the law. But the law itself is not written in medical language. So it talks about the age of the unborn child. And this makes it almost impossible for a working doctor to figure out whether they're within the legal bounds of the law, because no one actually knows when, if fertilization occurred. So many clinics just go with 20 weeks rather than 22 weeks because they're terrified of being prosecuted.
Right. So let me ask you, Carolyn, about this. Let me ask you about this case that you write about. I mean, did you find the one person in Texas that this has become a problem for? Did you just run this like a private detective and track this one individual down? Or is this something that is, more pervasive?
Yes. Anecdotally, the abortion funds, which are the grassroots organizations providing small grants to women accessing abortion, saying that they're receiving more and more calls from women facing this situation. And I just want to highlight, abortions at 20 weeks are very unusual. Fewer than 400 women a year in Texas terminate an abortion this late, terminate a pregnancy this late, and it's mostly for the reasons that Sarah Gula was there, because of a severe fetal anomaly or because the woman developed serious health problems in her pregnancy. So we're talking about very small numbers here, and very few people want to come forward because this is, you know, deeply personal, deeply traumatizing experience.
Right.
But anecdotally, we are hearing about more of these experiences.
Let's go to the phone lines. They're open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Bonnie has called in. Bonnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question, comment about this. It seems that the people who are arguing nowadays against access to abortion are too young to remember when we didn't have it and women were dying right and left. And I'm wondering if we're going to have to see a return to that. And also, are we starting to see underground access for emergency contraception, kind of a Dallas Buyers Club model for that?
All right, Bonnie, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. And our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation, 614-8980. And the point Bonnie brings up, we've seen that people on the border in the Rio Grande Valley, I've covered the story myself, have taken to going across the river into Mexico, and they're buying drugs that are used for ulcer treatments that could be used to induce miscarriage, which can be a very dangerous practice when there's not a doctor's supervision. And Carolyn, have you heard about things like that?
Yes, I have. I think that the term for it is called miscarriage management. As you say, there are clandestine abortions occurring in the Rio Grande Valley, where there are now no clinics, abortion clinics, as a result of House Bill 2.
All right, so I mean, we're talking about really the state of the women's health program. This came about through when Texas defunded Planned Parenthood. And Amanda Stevenson, she is a graduate student and a researcher at the looking at the impact of the Texas reproductive health legislation. She's working for the Texas Policy Evaluation at UT Austin. And so, Amanda, we were talking about earlier about the funding, and we heard from Senator Nelson talking about how there's more money available now, and they really are trying to beef up because they what happened when we saw the deep cuts to these programs in 2011?
When the programs were cut, both the DSHS, DSHS Family Planning Program, and the affiliate ban, which dramatically decreased the capacity of the Women's Health Program to provide services, we saw that the funding for family planning in Texas was cut so dramatically that about half as many women were able to access care, if you include all sources, after the rebound. So first we saw the cut, which led to very, very, very low levels of service, and then there was a small rebound. And after the rebound, the best estimate is about half as many women. If EPHC is expanded as they hope it is, we may see a further rebound, but still not to the levels that were in place before the cuts. An estimate based on the population of women in need in Texas, both before the cuts now and after EPHC is fully implemented, is that about 30% of the women in need in Texas were able to be served by the programs before the cuts, that now about 16% of the women in need are able to be served by the programs in place, and that after EPHC is fully implemented, if it does provide the level of contraceptive service that it hopes to, about 24% of the women in need in Texas will be able to be served by the funding.
So, Amanda, are we still trying to get up to the level where we were before the Planned Parenthood family planning clinics were shut down around the state?
So in absolute funding terms, we're not at the level that we were. So while the clip that you played of Nelson and Janik discussing funding, it includes funding that is not for family planning in the claim that funding is at a higher level than it ever has been. And so, yeah, we're not where we used to be. We don't have the level of funding.
So we're still trying to get back up to where we used to be, and Texas is spending more money and getting worse results. Right. That's what you're saying.
Well, Texas is spending more money because when women are unable to access subsidized contraception, they are more likely to have unintended pregnancies that will result in births that are paid for by Medicaid.
When we had Planned Parenthood clinics here in Texas, that we were able to get federal dollars, that was lost.
When we included Planned Parenthood clinics in the Women's Health Program, which was a Medicaid waiver program, yeah, we got $9 for every dollar we spent on that program from the federal government. We got the $9. And now the Texas Women's Health Program, which replaced it, is all state money. So, yeah, we're definitely spending more money on a per-dollar basis, yeah.
And so, Carolyn, didn't you report a while back that there was state money now being diverted from family planning going towards religious family planning clinics?
That's right. That was the crisis pregnancy centers that we were talking about earlier, state money that came out of the family planning budgets in 2011 and 2009, came out of family planning and went towards something called the Alternatives to Abortion Program, which funds crisis pregnancy centers. And these centers are designed to convince women with unintended pregnancies to either keep the child, to parent it, or to give it up for adoption. And they peddle biased, inaccurate information about abortion and its dangers, both psychological and health dangers. And that money is coming from what was going to be from the Women's Health Program, from the
All right.
Health Services.
I want to thank both of you guys, Carolyn Jones. Again, another great story from you in the Texas Observer. It's online. It's a free read, texasobserver.org. Also, Amanda Stevenson, your graduate student researcher assessing the impact of Texas reproductive health legislation for the Texas Policy Evaluation at UT Austin. Thank you both for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
And when we come back from the NPR Newsbreak, we're going to be talking about the cuts being proposed to the military, deep cuts and MIG changes to United States military capacity. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back.